Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
You're listening to the Investor Resources live radio program. We're live, wide awake, and alert, and I think we're enthusiastic. We're going to try to be anyway today.
Pretty close, yep.
And you want to talk to us today about your portfolio, about the market, about the economy, you know, anything has to do with investments, basically, you can give us a call here at 800-465-8770, toll-free, paid for by KTTH-770. 800-465-8770. And if you go to our website, I think we have this cleaned up now.
I believe we do. Yes,
it took some reprogramming, and that's not our job. We farm that out. Anyway, you want to sign up for the December 3rd webinar, go to irradio.com. Lower left-hand corner is the webinar link. And we will be glad to see you and figure out what on earth it looks like is unfolding in the market by the time we get through another week here. It's a short week that we've just been through. So a lot of things you look at and say, yeah, I'm not sure that makes any sense. Volume was down. It was a slow week as we have holiday on Thursday and then a half day on Friday. And the professional traders back on Wall Street, they say, what's the point of commuting? You know, why worry about this? We just go home.
Yeah,
let's not. And just take a day off. And next week, it's back to the old grind on Wall Street. Yeah, well, look, the old grind has really been obfuscated by technology. And there's just a lot of things that, particularly after this last election, we're saying, boy, you know, I didn't see that coming. How did that happen? Well, particularly with regard to the red wave we were expecting from the news media, and it didn't happen. And what's that have to do with investing? Well, bear with me just a few seconds here, and I'm going to do my best to tie some loose ends together. But if you search on the web for Google stopped the red wave, there's an interesting article on Epoch Times. Now, some people call that Epoch Times. I don't know. Push it together. It's Epoch Times, E-P-O-C-H. And you have to sign up for a freebie to be able to read the article. But the article explains how technology is changing our behavior and specifically how it changed people's votes. Now, we went through that with the last election, the prior election. So there's a lot of skepticism, but this really explains what's going on. You should find it interesting. Search for Google stopped the red wave. Well, what's this have to do with investing? Well, it has a lot to do with what is happening that we see going on in the cryptocurrency world. And if you pay any attention to financial news lately, FTX, what's that? Well, you know, it's a currency.
That's a fair question now.
Yeah, crypto. what really is. It's a cryptocurrency exchange, which has gone belly up. Now, one of the things that investors liked about cryptocurrency, digital currency, is, well, you can use it anywhere, and the government doesn't know what you're doing. Isn't that sweet?
Right.
Don't have to pay taxes. They don't know what's going on. I've got privacy. Until it collapses and it's bankrupt, and then what's the government doing to protect me? Where's my money? What's the government going to do to get my money back? Yeah, we wanted the isolation from government until, of course, it doesn't work because it was a Ponzi scheme. most of them are. And the guy that did put FTX together basically said, yeah, we just bring in other people's money and we spend it ourselves.
It's a simple plan. Yeah. you send us the cash, we spend it the way we want. Hmm.
So there's a more insidious deal that's behind this. And when crypto started getting a lot of news a few years ago, I said on the air, this will not last until the government has control of it because you're avoiding taxes. Government can't survive without taxes. So governments around the world, the central bankers, are developing the technology to create a central bank digital currency. So it's abbreviated CBDC, central bank digital currency. The technology exists to use it. What's not done is how do we operate this from the central bank? But we should object to this system. Why? All we have to do is look at what's going on in China. China is using the technology. They don't have central bank digital currency yet, but they use it to track who's been vaccinated for COVID and have their boosters. And you have a digital passport that says you're either green and can go where you want or red, you can't go anywhere. The protesters against the lockdown this last week, according to reports I've seen, were all changed to red. So you want to protest, but you can't leave your house. That technology is the same technology that applies to central bank digital currencies. And the argument's going to be, well, look how efficient this is. I mean, you don't need a credit card. I mean, you don't need cash. I mean, Perry, you don't use cash, so you're already there.
I'm already there. Yeah.
So that old fashioned stuff with paper and metal. I mean, why are you carrying that around? You've got a cell phone and that's all you need. Until you want to buy something that the government thinks is socially unacceptable. Think self-defense instruments. That would be one.
To start,
or you want to make a donation to an organization that they think is subversive. You are really involved in a lot of objectionable protest activities. They just close your bank account down. That's essentially what happened in China this last week with regard to the protesters. So the central bank digital currency is a control mechanism for government over its population wherever it's installed. I'm not a conspiracy guy. That's just the way the deal works and the way it's being implemented in a major communist country. Do we want that control here? So when you're thinking about investing in crypto, Perry, you found this link from Nick McGilly. I'm not sure quite how he pronounces his name. It looks like it's probably Italian. Anyway, he gives this testimony about being left out.
Right.
I mean, his friends were making lots of money. In fact, one of his friend made 10 times his money trading crypto in 2021. And he said, I only need to make 8 times this year and I'll permanently retire. And then another friend on this guy's a blogger, obviously, and said a high school friend contacted him for money advice. He had worked for a company that had just IPO'd and he was now worth in high six figures. Now, he wasn't even a founder or a senior in the company, but he'd received stock. He was almost a millionaire. And then there's a cousin of the coworker who made enough money launching his own cryptocurrency that he paid off his medical school debt And he was in mid-seven figures. He was so bullish that he moved to Puerto Rico to avoid paying taxes on the future growth of becoming a multimillionaire.
Everybody was getting rich, and it was just so easy.
Until it wasn't. And here we are suddenly a little bit later. But he confessed. He said, man, I got sucked in. I'm looking at my friends who know nothing about financial markets, and they're making a lot more money than I am in stocks. So he jumped in. But when it collapsed and he was down 80% on his investment, he decided he should maybe survive, take whatever's left. And he did. Fortunately, he'd only put 2% of his net worth into the investment. So he's still,
right.
He's still okay.
He didn't get wiped out, right?
But he remembered Warren Buffett, who said, and is quoted quite often, quote, people start being interested in something because it's going up, not because they understand it or anything else, but the guy next door who they know is dumber than they are is getting rich and they aren't. So they jump in. And that's a huge risk. I mean, you've got to have rules. You have to know how you're going to make the decisions, which is another, which poses another dilemma for investors. And before I get there, Perry, I'm looking right at the clock here. We're right up against break time. So we should
look at you
for a change.
We'll go ahead and get out of here. Take our first break of the morning. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next, market update webinar on the calendar, December 3rd, 9 o'clock in the morning. If you'd like to register for that, just go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Head to the webinar page and click that registration link. You'll get an email back with a link in it. And on December 3rd, you give that link a click. You will be live online with us. You'll get to see the charts we're always talking about and hopefully get a little insight into what's going on in the market currently and what's going on in the economy and what we're doing about it. Of both those things. So again, you can register for that at iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us this morning, we'd love to talk to you. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, that's true. Only the strong survive. If the company isn't strong, it goes bankrupt, unless it can find somebody to bail it out, which FTX is trying to find right now. They only need a couple billion dollars to bail them out. And they just happen to be a major contributor to the Democrat Party. Hundreds of millions of dollars. Well, let's see. I'm not sure it's quite that much. But they gave a couple hundred thousand to the Republican Party, and they gave, the number it comes back is $39 million to Democrats, who, by the way, did not do anything to regulate what SBF was doing with FTX. Anyway, this brings up another conundrum for investors, and that is, what do you do when you develop a process, you've tested it, and it works, and you're pretty confident, and then it doesn't? And frankly, that's every process. Sooner or
Correct.
Later, it
Yep.
doesn't work. And it doesn't work again, and it doesn't work again. And what do? The normal decision is, well, this is really messed up. We'll quit. Now, you had a process that had been tested, worked and worked and worked. But the average investor with something that doesn't work a few times says the process is wrong. There's a lot of work that's been published that says you have a process that works. It will quit working when you quit using it. But every investment process has a risk of being wrong in a consecutive period of time. Unlike the standard theory, which says bad returns are only random in your account, in reality, they can be consecutive in your account. It doesn't mean the process is wrong, but that's when we see investors capitulating and they run away and look for the next crystal ball that's going
right
to solve
away,
their problem.
You get the feeling there's got to be a better way and I'm going to find it right now. And you usually end up in a worse spot because now you're really just grasping at straws.
So you're listening to the Investor Resources Live radio program. You want to talk to us today? The magic number to get access is 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. Now, on that same theme, what every one of you who has invested in anything online or through a financial advisor has read before, past performance is not a guarantee of future results.
You know that.
Yeah. But we don't believe it because we look at that pretty mountain chart that says, if I'd only invested in 1926, two decades before I was born, I would be a wealthy retiree today. Well, except you can't do that. And so you happen to start your investment period at the top of a bull market and everything goes sour and you're saying, I got to do something different. This doesn't work. The market doesn't always go up, and that's true. The market does not always go up. In fact, it can stay down for long periods of time, and it looks like your process stinks.
Hopelessly broken, right?
But in fact, it's a process, and you must wait for the market conditions to change that favor that process. Now, we're momentum investors, and so when things quit going up, we get out of them, and that means at times they quit going up right after you buy them, and you, what do you want to do? Sit around and pray that it will eventually go up? Well, eventually, after the tech bubble peaked back in 2001, it took more than a decade to get even. So technically, you're just treading water in that period of time unless you have a process to make other decisions and rotate into other assets, other things that are working. And a lot of people don't want to do that. And the standard theory doesn't want to do that either. Standard theory is just basically diversify and buy and hold. And when everything is going down, close your eyes and wait it out. Well, don't do anything.
Don't make a move. That almost never happens. Yeah. Everybody said, well, I'm just going to hold on for the long term. I'm a long-term investor. And then when their account's down 35, 40%, that's when total panic sets in. You sell at the bottom, and then you do not have a process to get back in the market. And that's when you just sit there in cash. And some people sat in cash for years. And I just couldn't figure out a way to trust the stock market again. And that really is an enormous danger just to walk away from, like you said, Don, something that's worked decades at a time, which is the equity markets, and just say, well, I'm never going to do that again. And that's when you can really hurt your potential for forever building wealth. And that's the problem of not having a process. You don't have that process to put you back in the market, watch what's going on, and follow the money, which is almost always good advice. It's never perfect, but it gives you the best probability of being on the right side of those trades.
And part of the issue is standard financial theory that misses a couple of things. Let's just take toothpaste, for example. Everybody buys toothpaste. Well, yeah, most everybody I know buys toothpaste.
right.
But let's just go back a couple of years, 2019, and say it's costing you $2 a tube. And you go in today, hopefully you've replace that tube more often than
right.
in 3 years. But you go back to the store today and it's $4. And then you go look at Colgate Palmolive, and guess what? Their revenue's up. Well, isn't that a good sign? They've got growing revenue, and you assume that means profits are growing and the stock should be up. Well, but we have inflation that we haven't had in of this type in 40 years. So their costs are higher. The fact that their revenue is doubled doesn't mean that profits are even growing, because costs could be growing faster than their margin, their profit margin. You have to look at something else. What's your process? Now, if you're a value investor, I mean, you're going to look through all sorts of financial statement and footnotes and stuff, and that's okay. You got a process, and then you do what you were going to do. But the fact that stocks are valued on earnings also gives us a relatively short time frame that we're dealing with. If that's the factor that you're using in your portfolio, or that your advisor is using to guide you, because earnings are good, or earnings really good, or is it revenue caused by inflation that's really good? I need to ask the question. I should know what's going on and why. And where's your stop loss? Even things that are going up will eventually go down for a variety of reasons. Part of this assumption about investing, particularly with the 60-40 portfolio that most everybody who's using a financial advisor or financial website is in.
Now, there are some, sure.
But this is 85 to 90% of portfolios. There are some sort of 60-40 based on Harry Markowitz's published paper back in the early 50s, really modern today. The theory assumes, and your model assumes, that every investor has the same assumption about forward earnings, the same assumption about inflation, the same assumption about retail activity and its impact on business, the same assumption about risk, and the same assumption about time horizon. So what's wrong with that model?
What could go wrong? Yeah. except that, well, I've never seen a time where everyone's on the same page or even has the same way of even gathering that data. They don't even agree what the data is, let alone that it's all going to be, you know, consistently the same. And so that's how you immediately get into big trouble with that process.
And so what are you going to do? Well, I mean, so generally a financial advisor will tweak it a little bit and say, okay, so what are your goals? When do you need the money? How much do you have now? How much of a buffer do you have? How much are you willing to lose? Yeah, how much are you willing to lose? Mm-hmm. I remember talking with a prospective client a few years back who had been through series of financial advisors and said, that guy wouldn't even tell me what the portfolio would be like unless I was willing to lose 20% of my account. I mean, he stopped right there. We mm-hmm. did not go further until I said, yeah, I can lose 20% and I won't complain. Well, that's basically modern portfolio theory implemented in today's world. If you're not willing to lose that, the theory doesn't work, because you need to be willing to lose money while you are buying and holding and waiting for recovery. And the alternative is to use a process that is never, ever going to be right all the time. Because 60-40 will never, ever be right all the time, particularly when you get an extended bear market. Returns are disappointing at those times. And we've seen that particularly exaggerated with the collapse of crypto, which we talked about in the first segment. The problem that nobody really knows is how much of the mythology that came about in promoting crypto and Bitcoin originally. It's an inflation hedge. Well, no, it didn't work out that way.
Right.
It's an alternative risk asset to the market. Well, no, that didn't work out either. It's actually been more volatile than the stock market, and the losses have been bigger. We don't have any big, really big bankruptcies yet in the stock market in the current environment, but we certainly do with crypto. I mean, there are a lot of things that are changing, and you have to know what your process is, and you have to know where you're going to cut your losses, because everybody's going to get them. It's just that a lot of these people in crypto figured there were no losses. It always goes up. And
couldn't happen. Yeah, couldn't happen. We can't lose value here. This is it's win-win. We can put the money in. It's going to continue to go up. And as long as everybody doesn't panic, you know, as long as everybody just leaves their money alone, leaves it invested in crypto, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. There's not going to be a problem. And right away, that should have been a giant red flag to everyone on the way in, because that can't be true. And it's, you know, coming home to roost in crypto big time. That there's the trouble is not over. You know, it's just getting started good. And there's a growing, you know, feeling out there with people that are outside the crypto world that are like, don't regulate it. Just let it burn. It's fine. It'll take care of itself. It'll be self-correcting. It'll all be gone in no time anyway. So just, you know, hands off and let it go. So who knows where that goes, but it's there's definitely a turmoil in that market for sure.
At the
bottom of the hour here, Don, should we go ahead and get a break in here, Don?
Well, one moment here. The other attraction was that this was secure.
You have
your key, and nobody does until a lot of other smart people figured out how to step in and steal the money. And that's a new reality which investors
definitely
were not counting on.
Yeah, it definitely has happened. And it's, you, like you said earlier, Don, you want to talk about hard to try to track it and try to get it back. It's virtually impossible. So it's, you know, you're at danger. You're at risk for all of it all the time. And just need to keep that in mind. If you'd like to read about some of these fascinating facts during the week, we have a weekly email newsletter, The Week in Review. If you'd like to begin receiving that, you just need to send us an email. Send that to help@irradio.com. That's help@irradio.com. Just put Week in the Review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name, and that'll take care of it. You'll start receiving that. It goes out most Mondays, and it's a real good look at what's going on this week in the world of investing in the global economies. Give you a little idea about what things you can probably safely ignore and what are things you need to pay attention to. So give you a pretty good read on that. So again, you send that email to help@irradio.com. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine.
Well, that's the question that you really need to answer on a regular basis. As far as your investments are, yeah, well, every day or every week. It kind of depends upon your time cycle and what you're willing to tolerate for volatility in the meantime. But should I stay or should I go is basically, do you have a stop loss on your investments? Well, apparently you're going to stay no matter what, until the pain is too great. And then you're going to go with a lot of regret, and it's hard to recover from that. You're listening to the Investor Resources Live radio program. You want to talk to us, we have another half hour to go, or roughly that. Give us a call at 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. So we go back and look at the last several years, the COVID years. For all of us today, that's going to be much like the indelible imprint that we have in our brains if we were in the market in October of 87, summer of 1990, 2001 after the tech bubble, the great financial collapse of 07, 08, and 09. COVID has a brain imprint on all of us. Not everybody was invested in those years that I just ran through, when we had significant bear market losses. And we did recover, but mostly we were recovering because we held on. We just didn't know what was going on, and the technology hadn't caught up with how to report that to us. In 87, you wanted to buy a stock. Yeah, you were buying on a quarter point, not a penny spread, or a quarter point or more. And the commissions were hundreds of dollars, not free. Things have changed. And things are changing after the COVID deal. What we have learned since COVID is that government and mass media lied to us, and they still are
quite a bit.
What we know in the aftermath is that the shutdowns made virtually no difference in the death rates. The mandates for vaccination and lockdowns had no impact on the final result. I mean, there's just a lot of bad interference by government where the elite believe they know better than you do about how to run your own life. And if you want any evidence of that, just go to the World Economic Forum website. Look for Klaus Schwab, not Charles Schwab. That's where we custody client accounts. Klaus Schwab, K-L-A-U-S, Schwab. And in this last World Economic Forum, which was just recently completed, he made a very bold statement that said central bank digital currency is how we will control the world, and we know what needs to be done.
How scary is that?
Yeah. So should we stay or should we go? Actually, there's no place to go to avoid that if the central bank digital currencies are implemented by all central bankers. It's something that if you're concerned about your personal freedom and your personal choices, and you didn't hear the first segment of our show, you want to come back to our website probably on Tuesday. We'll have it up and run it and listen to what we see going on in China. You think about it, and it should cause some alarm bells to go off. But what's happened here in the aftermath of this economy is basically the United States ran up an additional $5 trillion of additional debt and boosted the M2 money supply by more than 40%, which caused a 40-year high in inflation. Welcome to the elite knowing more about what's in our best interest. High inflation and a massive amount of debt. That's what we got. And a massive restriction in our freedom to move about, to make our own decisions. So we are moving forward with a market that's trying to figure out how do we deal with this massive amount of debt. Well, the assumption's been, well, we have the U.S. dollar. Well, we do. But central bank digital currency efforts by other countries are really in part an attempt to undermine the U.S. dollar. And if that happens, we're just a third world country. Now, there may be an option that if we don't adopt central bank digital currency and we maintain the dollar and paper and coins and stuff, that other people who don't want to be controlled by it will be buying our dollar and continue to raise the value of the dollar in the global marketplace, which would be good for our economy, and everybody else would have their own problems to suffer through. But rising interest rates have hurt the housing market. You've tried to sell your house lately? Takes longer.
And it's much more expensive, like I said. I mean, and that was the goal, right? That's the goal.
That's right. That's part of the conundrum. So the Fed is stuck with, what do? We can let unemployment rise by stopping the economy, or we can crash the housing market. Which do you want?
Pick one. One's going to happen. What do you want to do? Yeah. That's where they are.
They are. That's the corner that they have painted themselves into. It's like the current administration's issue, resolution, it's not an issue, it's their resolution, is we'll just raise taxes. All right, let's see. We're going to take money that households could spend on businesses, buying stuff from them, which would raise taxes, revenue, and grow the economy, or we can take the money away from them. And yeah, now that won't grow the economy, will it? But it will let us claim that we're going to pay down debt, which, when's the last time you saw a Congress do that? And that's a big risk for the GOP with their marginal majority, that if they don't do anything about paying off debt, then they're just a different form of the Democrats.
What's the point? Sure. Yeah.
And we're going to be asking, why'd we vote for them? We knew the other one wasn't a good option, more debt and higher taxes, and now this one looks a lot like the same. Both of these major political parties have real problems internally trying to figure out who's going to control party policy. But let's get back to the economy. Should we stay or should we go? We take a look at the retail sales that have come in, and basically they say no real slowing in the economy. We had a massive run up on retail, but it's just like I mentioned in a few minutes ago in the last segment. It's an adjustment, a positive adjustment, because inflation has caused prices to be higher. And so retail stores coming in with good revenue, but I mean, they're selling stuff that they're overstocked on at discount. And when you sell stuff at discount, your margin disappears. Anyway, Kent is calling from Kent. Kent, glad to have you listening to us. We know somebody is listening because Kent calls in. So Kent, you're on the air in Puget Sound.
Okay, thanks. Good morning, guys. Hey, in the first segment, you start talking about the central bank digital currency, and you mentioned a lot about what's going on in China, and that was quite clear. If I missed this, please tell me. But it's my understanding that that Team Biden has a working group that was established, I think, perhaps late in the summer or early fall of this year. And they are really into studying the creation in the United States of a central banking digital currency. And it seems to be, you know, kind of in the background. You don't hear too much about it. But I think, in theory, that sounds like a horrifying thing to have this going on in our country. And I'm just afraid that it is going on. And I think that I just don't know what the chances are that they're going to actually pull this off. I know it's not going to happen overnight, but just the fact that there are people in this working group, as I understand, from different agencies of the federal government that are studying this. So I think it's real, but I obviously, because of, you know, the things that this could do to us, it's pretty scary. And I was just wondering, do you have any updates about status on this, where they're at, what their timetable or anything like that?
Nothing on the timetable. There have been numerous articles, which we've touched on this past year, that the Federal Reserve is working on this, but they're not alone. Virtually every central banker in the world is working on how to develop their own digital currency. And the point of that first segment was that once it's implemented, freedom disappears. Because whoever is in politics and control, it's just in much in the same way, which we now know has been confirmed by Zuckerberg, that they squashed reports that would have been favorable to conservatives in the last presidential election because of request by their friends in the opposing party. That once you have that power, you no longer have freedom. You have dictatorship. And you say, well, we still have elections. Yes, well, Venezuela has elections, but it didn't keep the dictator. Yeah. Well, Russia has elections, yeah. But guess who always gets reelected? Funny how that works. So you're right. And the article in Epic Times on how Google stopped the red wave. I just dropped the paper. So the actual search is, well, I did a pretty good job. Google stopped the red wave. Just do a Google search for that and read the article on Epic Times. I mean, you have to create a free account, but you know, that's your email.
We're We're already there. We're on that, and there's some very interesting articles that they do have on that website. So that's right. Back to the real quick on this central bank currency. I'd heard it termed as communism in its purest form, and I think sounds like a pretty good description of it. But I think again, back to the United States, it seems like they have this working group is composed of, as I said, many different departments within the U.S. government. So it's a big deal. And so, again, I don't know how we could possibly get more status on it, what's going on. I don't know. Maybe talk to our legislators?
Well, that would be a place to start, but transparency is not the name of the game with this administration. So I don't expect to see a lot of disclosure on what they're doing until they're ready to implement it.
Okay, well, in any case, if I got you off track, sorry about that. But anyway, it's sure that first segment really struck home with me, and so I just wanted to chat a little bit with you. Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, you're glad to have you out there, Kent. Yeah, so since you're already subscribing to Epoch Times, they also had another article in there on the digital currency issue. In fact, this weekend, my wife was reading it to me while I was fixing a meal, and she said, you know what that means to me? And she described basically what you just concluded, that this is really dangerous if you believe in personal freedom. And we're the last bastion of that in the world. Yep. Anyway, thanks for the call, Kent.
No problem. Thanks. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
So that opens up a line if you want to call. 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. And it looks like we ran right through a break, did we?
We did. It's time for us to take a brief pause here. I'd like to remind everyone again that you can sign up for our next market update webinar, which is scheduled for Saturday, December 3rd at 9 o'clock in the morning. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Just go to the webinar page and there's a registration link. You'll be good to go. One of the best parts of that webinar is we always have plenty of time to answer any questions that anyone who's online with us has that morning. And we get to them all. We always get a lot of great questions. It's a really good time to get even a second opinion on an individual security. You know, how does this look? Time to buy, time to sell. We'll be glad to give you an opinion on that too. So again, you can register for that by going to iriradio.com. We have a whole segment left for you here this morning. If you'd like to call us, give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here.
You're listening to the live call-in show with Investor Resources. It's Don Creech and Perry Sykes. You want to talk to us, it's 800-465-8770. And we are dreaming of a white Christmas. No, that's not the Christmas. We're dreaming of happy days here again in the market. We don't quite see them yet because it looks like a recession is lying ahead and nobody wants to talk about it. We certainly don't know when our economic airplane is going to get cleared by the tower for a landing, soft or otherwise. You know, have you ever been on an airplane which, when it's landing, is being followed by fire trucks?
No, but that's not a good thing. No.
I have.
That's not the way that's supposed to work.
It does cause a little anxiety when you're being followed by flashing red lights on both sides of the plane. Obviously, we made it down safely. We had to open up an airport on an emergency basis to get us on the ground. But that's kind of where we are with the economy. We are flying around without clearance to land. And the hope is that retail is going to do well. But when we actually look at what's going on with retail and department stores, they are on track for a crash landing, or let's just call it irrelevancy. If we go back and look over the last two decades, many department store chains have already liquidated in bankruptcy court or filed for Chapter 11 so they could get out from leases and close stores. Think Sears, Radio Shack, even Macy's has done this. Or Macy's is closing stores anyway.
Yes.
So brick and mortar used to be, that's what you did. You went to the mall, or you went down to the local strip mall that was close, and you could go to Radio Shack and buy anything you wanted for your little hobby. They missed the boat when computers came along. They decided there was no demand for them, and it turned out there was no demand for their store. Took a while to unload it.
Oops.
But now we can turn around and go buy virtually anything online. So these, there's a major shift that's continuing to go on. It takes time, which is, you know, just a part of what's happening. And this aftermath of the COVID economy is that we bought a lot of stuff online during COVID. Oh, yeah. I wonder what, you know, I've always wanted, but I just, you know, In my case, I just didn't want to drive to Seattle to pick one up. I don't have to pick one up. They'll deliver it. By golly, I can get it now, and I have it. And, in fact, I just bought some batteries for my Porter Cable tools that were dying from Amazon, of course. And so they show
because,
up.
Yes,
I
don't have they've to, got it. Yes, they've got it.
Don't have to go look for it.
Yep, they've got it. So, yep.
In fact, I can't find the Angel treetop for my second Christmas tree in the house. And I'm going through local stores, and I'm finally yesterday I said, well, this is stupid. I haven't looked on Amazon yet. So after today's show, that's, you know what I'm going to be doing.
It's going to happen. Yeah. And you'll find it.
So when we just touched on this a moment ago about what do you want? Do you want inflation or you want unemployment? Where we are in the economy and what eventually is going to unwind the current rally in the stock market is one of these is going to become the dominant problem. And it doesn't look like there's any way out of it. We shades of the misery index from Jimmy Carter.
There we go. Yep.
Yeah. In fact, we shouldn't be surprised, I guess. I saw online a picture of Jimmy Carter during his presidency, and then Senator Biden was standing next to him. It was in the same photo. Well, it's no wonder we have the same problems that we did back under that administration. But the misery index is probably not going to get a lot better until we unwind one of these other problems. And, you know, this is a lot of golly, I wish it wasn't like that. But there are some things about which we can be thankful. One, we can be thankful that we live in this century and not one of two or three or four back or more. I mean, life was much more difficult than we actually have it today. And the fact that the unemployment rate is near a 50-year low, I mean, that's actually good news for people who want to earn an income and control their own life, control their own spending, spend it on what they want. That's good. Unemployment rate's down from 4.6% in October of 21. So that's a positive. The other thing that's related to it is the unemployment claims are down. Okay, now I think this is a mixed one. It's good that claims are down, but is it because people are working or because government agencies are still implementing largesse and doling out money and people are saying, I can get by on that. Why go to work? Government's going to send me money. It's kind of like the young child who is trying to understand cash when dad says, you know, we just can't afford that this month. And the child says, well, just go down to the ATM machine. You just punch in some numbers and it gives you money.
Nice.
Right. Well, somebody's got to have money in there first in order for that. And it's, you know, it just doesn't work that way. Well, we've had a housing bubble in the past. We have one now, which is kind of unwinding, and we are fortunate that ours has not unwound as much as in Canada. I mean, Canada's housing bubble, and unfortunately, Canada is often a precursor to the United States, much like California is a precursor to things, other bad economic decisions that other states decide to follow because, well, California did it. Yeah, well, look at the mess California's in. Oh, I don't want to talk about that. But mortgage debt as a percentage of our economy is lower than during the housing bubble. I mean, people who did go out and buy houses or financed houses, refinanced houses, have done so much more responsibly than the speculation that was occurring in the last decade. So mortgage debt's up, but we have more equity than we did back then. And that shows in that the delinquency rate is lower than it has been since 1979.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
That's a good thing. I mean, that's something to be thankful for. That's a positive for the economy. So the ability of people to actually pay their bills is stronger than it has been in a long time. So we're coming up on the end of the show, and we're basically, as investment managers, we have to say, are we in a bull market or a bear market? You're in one or the other. So the issue is, you're in a bull market when most everything's going up, and you're in a bear market when most everything's going down. And there is no magic percentage of 20% one way or the other that really makes the determination of that. It's a function of, do you own things that are working, or do you own things that are losing? And how do you adjust your portfolio along the way? That's one of the things we will address in the upcoming webinar on December 3rd at 9 o'clock. Register for that at IRI Radio. You want to talk to us during the week, you can do so at 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. If you're not getting the week in review, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. And we are out of time. God bless you, God bless your family, and God bless the United States of America. We'll talk to you next week.